Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. Dial 678-ESOG now for a solution to your foundation and waterproofing problems.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
I actually really enjoy the college football offseason. Now, not as much as I enjoy the actual season, but the getting ready for the season part has always been kind of fun to me. I always forget who it was that coined the phrase talking season. For some people, that's kind of like a negative term. They don't like the talking season. They want to see the action. But for someone who talks for a living, obviously, it's probably not a huge surprise to you to find out I actually enjoy the talking part of all this. I like the hot takes. I like the people who, you know, kind of make the projections and the predictions and everything else. I love talking about the ones that I agree with and speaking about the ones that I disagree with. With that in mind, I want to begin the show with something like that here today. And what's interesting about this is that it's one of the few outliers, because admittedly, when you do this every single day and you see all these like websites and everything else who kind of put their either way too early top 25 stuff out or like the analytics stuff, for the most part, they all kind of rhyme with each other. Like everybody's within like a rating or two of every single team. It's always weird to me how much like unanimous agreement there is on most topics in the preseason, even though the media for the most part gets it wrong. The analytics folks aren't, you know, perfect when it comes to making predictions either, but for the most part all the preseason predictions kind of end up looking, you know, somewhat similar. However, here is one that is kind of way outside the boundaries of what we normally see, and frankly it's not necessarily all that kind to UGA. I don't really care. A lot of you probably like it. You kind of like the idea of Georgia not quite having so much hype, but ESPN has put out its FPI, its Football Power Index. Now this is not to be confused with another, I guess, analytics deal that ESPN now has, which is the SP Plus, which we talked about last week. When it comes to the math on any of this, I'm not quite all that sure how any of these numbers are tabulated. They don't show their work enough for me from time to time, but nonetheless, it's at least somewhat interesting. And in the preseason projections that came out, as I said before, a little bit of an outlier for Georgia. Georgia, who's been like, I think they were fifth in SP Plus the other day. They were like sixth in the way too early ESPN top 25. For the most part, they're kind of top 10-ish, you know, single digit rating next to their name and all of these things that come out. But the ESPN preseason FPI, Georgia just 10th. And in the story at ESPN.com, when I post the show later on at the worldfamousdognation.com, I'll make sure to put a link to this. They used a very interesting word to describe the scenario with Georgia. I think we have this graphic to show. This is from the ESPN.com story. It says, rebuilding year, top SEC teams in preseason FPI. So last year it has Georgia at third. This year it only has Georgia at 10th. Alabama was second. They dropped fourth. LSU fourth, it drops all the way down to 12th. Florida was at 8th a year ago. It's at 11th right now. But the one we care about here is Georgia. The idea that Georgia preseason third in the FPI a year ago, dropping down to just 10th right now. Now, let me say this as a quick aside, and then I'll get back to the more serious part of this conversation. I do think it's kind of funny that ESPN could suggest it's a rebuilding year for Georgia, obviously rebooting a lot of the talent and things like that. Rebuilding year for Georgia, and in the preseason projection, it's still rated higher than Florida. I think there's something kind of enjoyable about that. But how about the notion here for a moment that the expectations for Georgia to start the 2020 season aren't quite as high as the expectations were in the 2019 season? That somehow Georgia's a little less than it once was. I would suggest that the one thing that maybe the ESPN FPI doesn't factor in well enough, something that like say SP Plus probably does, is the way the recruiting kind of factors into all of this. But let's just take this seriously for a moment and say that maybe there is to a degree an additional level of skepticism around Georgia based on the way that it performed the 2019 season, certainly not living up necessarily to the idea that Georgia should have been a playoff team a year ago with the way that it played in some of its games. I think that puts a little extra spotlight on Georgia to kind of go out and fix what was its big problem a year ago when it comes to the offense. Because if you pay attention to any of these, you know, as I said before, the Bill Connelly stuff, the SP Plus, the ESPN FPI, anything like that, one thing you're going to see is the big statistical outlier for Georgia is this is not really a top 30 defense based on these, or I should say top 30 offense based on these preseason projections right now, which means that you got to have a better performance from your offensive coordinator. As much of a hot take as it might sound, you actually need Jamie Newman to play better in 2020 than Jake Fromm played for you in 2019. Doesn't make Newman a better quarterback than Fromm. I think Fromm was hamstrung by the system that he was given last year. But if Georgia's going to be a real contender this year, you need Newman to play better this year than Fromm did a year ago, as kind of weird to the ears as that might sound. Now, when Smart talked offense the other day, he wasn't ready to reveal all the tricks he has up his sleeve yet. How much are things going to be different? How much is Todd Monken going to bring in kind of a new era for Georgia? What's all that going to be like? The other day, Smart was still kind of playing his cards close to the vest, which is certainly his prerogative and probably exactly what you'd expect him to do. Here is what Smart said back then.
I don't know the answer to that. I think the roles on our 2020 staff still aren't complete with our extra assistant coach spot open. I think that will develop and play out as we go along. I'm certainly excited. I know that the kids are excited for an opportunity, and you know, we'll have to see where that goes. I can't honestly say that right now. I think everybody wants to hear some grand speech of opening this up and doing that. That's not necessarily what you need. Is to be productive offensively, score points, and do the explosive plays, which we've talked about consistently.
I mean, I think the reason why some people, probably myself included, would want to hear, to use Smart's phrase, some sort of grand speech here, I think one of the reasons that might be true is because of projections like these, where all of a sudden there is that just degree of doubt about what Georgia's doing offensively and if it has the kind of offense that sort of keeps pace with its own defense as among the nation's best. But with that in mind, let me talk about the defense here for a moment, because the other part of the storyline is not just Georgia needing to get better on offense, and probably that offense kind of like that one, like, did you ever have a class in high school where you had one like bad quiz or bad test grade and all of a sudden that was kind of pulling your average down all year long? When it comes to Georgia's preseason projections, the performance of the offense a year ago is probably that one outlier that kind of pulls down the overall average and grade for UGA. But on the subject of the defense for a moment, I think when you kind of look at this ESPN FPI stuff, to the extent that you take it seriously at all, I think the one thing that you do see is that the role that Georgia's defense is going to play for the Dogs this season and how important it's going to be. Georgia is projected as the number two defense in America preseason, according to ESPN FPI. They do have Clemson rated ahead. But think about this upcoming year for Georgia here for a moment. Georgia's going to do something in 2020 that it has not done a lot during the Kirby Smart era. Think about this with your own mind, your own eyes, looking back across it. Georgia right now is slated to play a top five offense in the regular season. That's what Alabama still is. Now, you may say without Jerry Jeudy, without Tua Tagovailoa, and without, you know, some of the pieces lost, this is not going to be as good an offense, you know, on the field this season as the projections might suggest, given the fact that most of those projections are based on some Alabama players, some of which aren't here anymore. That's certainly a fair thing to say, but let's just take the number seriously for a moment. Doesn't that put a little bit more pressure on the Georgia defense to actually be as good as advertised and actually be as impactful as so many of us believe that it has a chance to be? I think that's going to be a really important story. Georgia being as dominant defense as we think they can be because of the fact that at least very early in the season, Georgia's going to be playing a better offense on paper than we're kind of used to seeing the Dogs play in the regular seasons of the last couple of years. That'll be very, very, I think, a very important storyline for the upcoming campaign. One more final thing kind of on this as well. Something else I also think is kind of interesting about the FPI stuff here for a moment is the fact that in some respects, the Georgia schedule, when you look, you know, kind of closely at some of this, it actually ends up being, you know, semi-difficult. Obviously, Auburn's not going anywhere. You know, I joked about Florida a moment ago. They're still ranked 11th. That's still a tough game. Alabama is, you know, still right up there near the very top of the country. You also see this. Tennessee, according to the ESPN FPI, making a big jump in terms of its preseason projection. They are rated 19th for the 2020 season. This is obviously based on, like, the numbers and the metrics and things like that. That's a jump of 14 spots from where the Vols were a year ago. So as you start sort of formulating your opinions for the upcoming season, you got a lot to think about here. Georgia thought of as one of the best defense in the country, but an offense right now that has some questions being asked about it that kind of keeps Georgia from ranking at the very top of the nation's best right now. Now, the addition of Jamie Newman and the work that Georgia did in the 2020 recruiting class, a year older for Dominic Blaylock when he returns to full health, and George Pickens and everything else, Georgia has a chance to kind of go out and prove these math guys wrong. But the opinions are starting to form around the Dogs this upcoming season about who it's going to be playing and how it will play in those games. A great defense, an offense we're not sure about, that is kind of the common opinion when it comes to Georgia right now. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. We're presented today by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. And we are glad to have you with us no matter how you get to us. Live on video, 10 a.m. Facebook. I believe we are all good to go on YouTube. So that crisis has been averted for those of you that normally watch on YouTube. We're glad to be able to deliver the show back to you in the way that we've kind of become accustomed. So we appreciate that. Also live on Twitter as well. I've been taking more Twitter comments throughout the show too, which I'm certainly proud of. Radio Noon, Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, as a podcast, wherever you find them. And as I said before, I'll post the show even to the worldfamousdognation.com a little bit later on. And we could not do this today if it were not for our friends at Engineered Solutions of Georgia. Of course, ESOG is a proud partner of the Georgia Bulldogs, and they're big partners for us there as well. So if you're dealing with any kind of cracked foundation or a wet basement or damp crawl space, ESOG can help fix it for you. They are a solutions-oriented company. That means small, simple fixes, they'll handle that for you. But sometimes it's bigger, more substantial work that needs to be done. You can trust Engineered Solutions of Georgia for that as well, because they have two full-time engineers on staff. Let's face it, when you're dealing with a big problem, you want smart people doing that work for you. You don't get any smarter than that from our friends at Engineered Solutions of Georgia. They also offer a fully transferable triple protection warranty on materials, installation, and design. And they have a phone number that could not be easier to remember. Simply dial 678-ESOG now. That's 678-ESOG now. That'll get you in touch with my friends at Engineered Solutions of Georgia. All right, coming up in a moment, I'm going to buddy Connor Riley here on Dog Nation Daily. Before I do that, though, I kind of want to set up what we're going to talk to Connor about, at least in part. And I want to do this as we go around the doghouse here today on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. So we have kind of highlighted a really fun video that the UGA folks did with DJ Shockley talking to the Georgia early enrollees. And there was one moment in particular that was really funny. Now, you know, I followed Georgia recruiting pretty closely. I didn't quite realize that Major Burns was as entertaining a personality as he is. This is a very, very, it's just funny, right? And there was a very funny moment in this video where DJ Shockley, the Grand Inquisitor in this case, says, hey, you guys have been here. You've been going through these workouts. Who have you noticed? Who's impressed you? This is sort of classic, you know, content, right? You know, one guy praising another always kind of works well in the sort of content world. And it starts off with, like, Warren Brinson playing it very cool. You know, listen, he's not going to be impressed by anybody. He wants people to be impressed by him. Jalen Kimber kind of much the same way. I'm not here to brag on anybody. I'm here to make a name for myself, which you totally respect. You know, guys want to be alpha in a situation like that, and I completely get that. However, Major Burns kind of comes off the top rope with a very, very, very high degree of praise for UGA linebacker Adam Anderson. I think this is just great. It's very honest, it's very genuine, it's very real, and I think it sets us up for a pretty good conversation. You may have already seen this, heard this. I know it's been on dognation.com before, but before we bring on Connor, I want to play this right now. Here is Major Burns talking about being impressed by what he's seen from Mr. Anderson thus far.
Has anybody stood out to you like, man, I remember watching this dude and now I'm standing next to him, or this dude's a different freak than I thought about? Anybody that come to mind for you guys that you guys working out with now that you say that about?
I feel like we all peers.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I feel like just everybody, really.
Yeah. Nah. We got a big linebacker. I think his name Adam. Right, like 6'5", and he run a 4.3.
So I ain't never seen nothing like that in high school. So we here, and I seen that, so that opened my eyes. I'm like, all right, it's nice to have that next to me.
Yeah.
Listen, I just love that. Because the easiest thing in the world for Burns to do in that moment, I'll put a link. I've linked the video like 9,000 times, but when we post the show again today, I'll re-link this video. It's about 20 minutes long. It's good stuff with DJ and the early enrollees for those who haven't got a chance to see it yet. But in that particular moment, the easiest thing for Burns to do would be to act like he's the same as everybody else, right? To kind of echo what Brinson had said, echo what Kimber had said of, yeah, you listen, you know, all these guys are impressive. We're all impressive. We're all here to work. And he's like, no, let me tell you about somebody in particular. That's Adam Anderson. Now, does that mean that Anderson's about to have the biggest breakout season in the world? I don't know. He may have been a candidate to do that anyway. I don't necessarily take that from what Major Burns says here, but I do think that what Major kind of references is sort of a specific category of Georgia player. All the recruits that Georgia brings in now, they're all impressive, but some of them kind of give you that reason to do that sort of double take type thing where you're like, wow, that is a little bit different kind of guy. You know, I remember, I guess the first time that I saw Anderson in person would have been at one of these like Touchdown Club of Atlanta awards banquets going back to a couple of years ago. And, you know, you see the tall guy and, you know, you see the way that, you know, kind of suit fits. And you're like, man, that is to think that at this particular time, not a guy not even in college yet, like this is just a pretty different you know, kind of athlete, you know, long arms, big long frame, the kind of thing that really works for you in college football. When you pair the speed with that, it's obviously easy to understand why he could have great success. And go back and watch some of the high school stuff that he did against, you know, Justin Fields and some of the guys he got a chance to play against while he was at Rome. And it's easy to understand why a guy like Major Burns is so impressed by Adam Anderson. Now, with that in mind, when we bring on Connor Riley, we're going to talk more about this, because Connor had a good piece up at Dog Nation of the Day. Started off as a video, but he also wrote about it, about who some of those, you know, I think the DJ kind of called him a freak, who some of those freak athletes are at Georgia, who are some of those athletes that kind of bring the wow factor a little more than others. I think it's a really fun thing to do on a day like this here. So on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia, in honor of Major Burns and his praise for Adam Anderson, let's do more of that with Connor Riley right now.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
I'll say hello to Connor Riley here. Connor has actually been on a little bit of a vacation, so you may not have seen him on the pages of DogNation.com as much over the last couple of days, but it's good to kind of have him back with us right now. And I guess, Connor, before we get into the content itself, are you kind of with me on this in the fact that Major Burns saying what he said there kind of like swimming against the tide of like Kimber and Brinson, who are kind of playing it kind of cool? The fact that Burns was like, listen, y'all can play it cool if you want to. Let me tell you who I was impressed with. I hadn't seen something like this growing up. The fact that Burns was willing to be that honest and that genuine, I think that's pretty fun. I was very, very entertained by that.
Yeah, I think when talking with these guys and getting to know them, I just always tend to believe that honesty is sort of the best way to get to know these guys a little bit better and see their real personality. And I certainly love that Major Burns was willing to do that. And shout out a guy that Major, Adam Anderson, it can catch you off guard when you see some of these guys up close and personal.
Yeah, Adam Anderson kind of reminds me a little bit of an NBA player. He's not as tall as the typical NBA player, but he's a lot taller than I am. And so when you see him, you know, the way these NBA, Bill Simmons talked about this before, about how you can always tell like who's going to be a good NBA player by the way they carry their height, that they're not kind of hunched down, if they're kind of walking shoulders back, you know, chest out, that lets you know they're kind of comfortable being tall. Anderson does seem comfortable in his own skin there, comfortable in his own body. And to use the phrase that DJ used in the video and what you kind of wrote about and spoke about on video the other day for DogNation.com, if you're looking for those kind of like freak athletes at Georgia, I mean, Anderson is one of those. Now, by the way, not every freak athlete goes on to be a great player. It's fair to point out that in some cases you can see freak athletes in college football who never quite materialize on the field for whatever reason. So to call Anderson among the top sort of freakish athletes at Georgia is a fair description and yet not necessarily a predictor of great success on the field. But if you're talking about athletes who just kind of look a little bit different, Anderson's clearly one of those guys, is he not?
Right. The one thing you mentioned, his wingspan, he's just so incredibly long that I do think that makes it difficult for opposing offensive linemen in pass rushing situations to sort of get a hold of him or get a piece of him, because he's just able to disengage them so quickly. And I think it really speaks to Anderson's athletic gifts that while he hasn't necessarily been able to beef up and put on the weight that you maybe need to become an every down outside linebacker in the SEC, he's still an incredibly valuable part of this Georgia defense because his athletic gifts allow Georgia to really move him around the defense and play him in a lot of different positions, especially on those third down situations. And I think we saw later in the year against LSU, against Baylor, I think things have started to click for him a little bit in terms of filling out that role and being a third down pass rusher or third down sort of linebacker who can cover guys out of that linebacker spot.
Who are some of the other guys for you that kind of jump out in that same way, especially your perspective, because you do watch games from the field. You're one of our video guys, and so you're down there on the grass for these games. That's a little bit different way of watching a game, low angle compared to seeing it on TV or seeing it from the press box. Who are some of the other guys that kind of jump out to you as just sort of athletic beyond belief, combination of that sort of size and speed that just makes them different?
The first guy is Trayvon Walker. He's 6'5", 290 pounds, and that doesn't sound all that much bigger than some of the other defensive linemen. But when you see him and see him move and the way he's able to do the things that he is against, you know, big offensive linemen, I think back to the Auburn game where he essentially started as a one technique in between the center and guard and looped all the way outside the tackles to bring down Bo Nix for the game-ending sack. That's just something that you don't see a guy of that size be able to do a whole lot. And I mean, I've been following football pretty closely for, you know, the last 10, 15 years, and have a very good understanding of the history of the game. I've never seen a defensive lineman of his size playing on kickoff teams.
Yeah.
Like, that's just something you don't see all that often. The other guy, he has yet to play down for Georgia football, but I think he's probably going to end up being one of the more talked about guys, you know, we talk about this offseason. And that's Darnell Washington.
Yeah.
I don't know if he is a better sort of pass catcher receiver than Arik Gilbert or Theo Johnson all right now, but seeing him at the Under Armour All-American game, he is just so big. So just so much bigger than everyone else. I mentioned in the video that I did, you know, LeBron James is listed at 6'9", yeah. 6'8", 250 pounds. Darnell Washington is 6'7", 260. I mean, he's obviously, you know, LeBron James is a truly special athlete. But, you know, that size on a football field, if Georgia's willing to get creative with him, and I think that's going to be one of the big challenges in using Washington is, you know, he's not going to be this traditional tight end we've seen. If you want to get the most out of him, I think you have to be willing to do some stuff with him that you're not able to do with other guys. And I think if Georgia's willing to get creative, put him out, at least in the red zone, try and put him on smaller corners to take advantage of his just incredible size, I think that's where he can truly become the best player he's going to be.
I think that what's telling about Washington, and I hope this comes across as a compliment because I mean it that way, I think most people, and you were certainly there, would say that Washington probably did not have a great Under Armour All-American game, and yet even with that and the kind of like recruiting fall that sometimes mm-hmm. takes place during the All-Star season, if you don't have a great week or you don't have a great game, he never really was a threat to lose five-star status because of how highly he was rated to begin with. That gives you an idea of the athleticism the people that have done this for a living kind of see when they look at Darnell Washington. This is a guy that even with not maybe a great all-star game performance, there's just no justifiable way to like drop him from five-star status because of how unique that package of skills and size and speed were and what had been sort of noticed about him in the year kind of preceding his arrival there at Georgia.
Yeah, and I just think with Washington and his Under Armour performance, I just don't think he was in the best football shape, which, you know, makes sense given his season had ended, you know, a while ago. And he probably, as most high schoolers and most people in general, when their season ends, they're not thinking, oh, I got to go train for this All-American game.
Mm-hmm.
But I think when Georgia gets him in the strength and weight program and he is, you know, consistently working out and sort of taking advantage of all the University of Georgia has to offer, I think he is going to be an interesting, you know, sort of piece for this Georgia offense. Again, if they're willing to sort of use him and integrate him into the offense as opposed to just, you know, saying, hey, you're really big, go block that linebacker.
But, by the way, Connor Riley here on Dog Nation Daily presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. I thought you had a really good piece about George Pickens here this morning on the pages of DogNation.com. And obviously Todd Monken's a guy, as you know, that's had great success with receivers before. And Pickens is one of those guys that, you know, obviously I'm a big fan of his. We've talked about him a lot. But he's one of those guys that if you put him in a good system, if you get someone who can really get hands on him and, you know, kind of create a scenario where he gets, you know, more opportunities to haul balls in, I could see him thriving in a situation like that. For those people who want to see, you know, Pickens control his demeanor a little bit more and, you know, kind of, you know, maybe handle his business from a maturity standpoint as well as he handles his business on the field sometimes. To be a part of an offense that really maximizes your potential, that may be the magic elixir that causes all of that to happen. I liked your piece because I think it's really fun for a Georgia fan to kind of dream a little bit about how a sharp offensive mind, I don't think there's any doubt that's what Todd Monken is, a sharp offensive mind working with a prodigious talent like Pickens, that could be quite the matchup, could it not?
Yeah, so to sort of explain what I did, I went back and looked at, you know, his time at Southern Miss, his time at Oklahoma State when he was the offensive coordinator, and then his time at LSU when he was the quarterbacks and – or not, he was the wide receiver and passing game coordinator, and sort of, you know, compared how the top receiver in those offenses tended to do. And I think the average – you know, it averaged out to the leading receiver in his offense had 67.5 catches, 996 yards, and 10 touchdowns.
Yeah.
In Georgia's history, there has been one wide receiver that has had more than 67 catches in a season. There has been one wide receiver that has had more than 1,000 yards in a season. There is one wide receiver that has had more than 10 touchdowns in a season.
Yeah.
And I think when you look at some of the names he's coached, guys like Dwayne Bowe, Justin Blackman, those guys have gone on to be successful players.
Yeah.
And even you factor in some of the stuff he did at the NFL with Mike Evans and Jarvis Landry and Odell Beckham in his last stint in Cleveland. When he has talented wide receivers, which I certainly believe Pickens is, he tends to get the absolute most out of them. Blackman was not the same player, obviously, when he went on to the NFL. But I think the big thing with Pickens, and this goes to sort of the maturity thing, I was, you know, 15 feet away from when he threw the Georgia Tech defender in the wall. And you could tell, like, two or three plays before that, like, he's got to get himself under control or something is about to happen. And unfortunately, it did, to the detriment of Georgia. I think with Pickens, it's up to him how good he wants to be and how great of a player he wants to be, because he made my freaks list, because the stuff he's able to do, you know, he's not the burner, or, you know, he's not this Calvin Johnson size guy, but the way he is able to contort and twist his body in the air to sort of make some of these catches that we've seen, that is a truly special gift. And I think if he can stay focused and stay locked in, you know, some guys, I understand you need to, you know, be chippy, motivate yourself during the course of the game.
Yeah.
It's, you know, how close can he get to that line without going over it, I think, is the big thing with him.
So based on what you just said, I'll re-up, you know, my opinion on this. You said from an eyewitness account, you saw him having difficulty controlling his temper on the field. You can say you saw that from up close. I'm going to tell you, Connor, again, that I believe an offense truly tailored to maximize his potential, I think that can be a really powerful motivator. I think that can help young men find a reservoir of, I guess, patience that they didn't know they already had, if you really feel like that you're a part of something that can, you know, give you that springboard to the NFL, which all of these guys really want. You know, if you're looking for an improved demeanor from Pickens this upcoming season, a chance to be a part of a Todd Monken offense that literally might be, you know, just giving him $100 bills, figuratively speaking, in terms of his in terms of his you know, NFL future, I think that can be just a really big motivator for a lot of guys. In this case, obviously, Pickens included.
Yeah, and Pickens, to his credit, acknowledged after the Sugar Bowl that he's got some growing up to do, and, you know, he is only a freshman in college. I can think back to my own times as a freshman in college when I got into a fight in a pickup football game.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm not saying that he's not going to be able to do this, and I think it's an incredible statement of who he is as a player, that the biggest thing he has to sort of work on is just keeping it focused, you know, not so much during the play, but the stuff that goes on after it. So, again, my statement is George Pickens can be as good as he wants to be.
Let me finish kind of on this topic here for a moment. I think the ESPN FBI stuff is fascinating. Even if I don't completely agree with all of it, or maybe even understand part of it, when you see these projections on the basis of something other than someone's opinion, I think and these are obviously based on, you know, some degree of metrics, I think you have to pay a little bit more close attention to it. And I guess one of the things I wanted to talk to you about a little bit is who some of the teams that Georgia is about to play this upcoming year. I think I'm going to write about this at DogNation.com this week, but it's just unusual for Georgia to be playing like a top five offense during the regular season. For the most part, you know, a lot of the offenses that Georgia has played in the SEC run as of late have been a little bit more pedestrian than that, and yet Alabama still projected in that kind of top five category. No Tua Tagovailoa, no Jerry Jeudy, but still plenty good. I think the early thoughts on the Georgia defense and how good it can be, it's almost like you need Georgia to be that good if you're going to have to play an offense like Alabama early in September. It kind of helps set the tone for the rest of the season, does it not?
Yeah, I think that Alabama game in particular is going to be such an interesting clash of styles, where I think Alabama, you know, even with the transition of quarterback, like Najee Harris, I think might be the best running back in the country next year. So it's going to be a very interesting clash of styles, where you have a young Alabama defense that is sort of rebuilding after a down season last year. And it was very young a year ago, so you can see it maybe being a bit more seasoned. You have on the Georgia offensive side of the ball a lot of turnover, you know, obviously a lot of potential, but again, that potential is just a fancy French word for someone who hasn't done anything yet. So I think with that schedule and that game in particular, you know, I think that Alabama contest is really going to shape an early narrative of, okay, Kirby Smart as a coach, and specifically Todd Monken as an offensive coordinator. Because if things go well in that game, at least from an offensive standpoint, they might not necessarily win it, but I think with the way Georgia's schedule sets up, they don't necessarily have to. But if they play well and they win that game, I think it's going to make things for the rest of Georgia's season a lot sort of easier to talk about and discuss.
Yeah, how are you feeling about the rest of the schedule right now? Because, you know, Florida still rates pretty high on things like this, even though I obviously don't think that Florida's going to be Georgia. Auburn's not going anywhere. I've heard some real bold predictions about Bo Nix as of late. I mentioned in the earlier portion of our program that, at least in terms of the preseason projection, Tennessee takes a big leap up here. They are inside the top 20 according to FPI. Pro Football Focus has South Carolina as a team that may have a regression back towards some more wins this upcoming season, to the extent that you take that seriously. How do you feel about the Georgia schedule right now? Just your overall gut on that.
I think it sets up very – so, obviously, you know, I think they have a very tough opening with a well-coached Virginia team that they're going to see on a Monday night, and then 12 days later – they're going to play Alabama at Alabama in what might potentially be a night game there at Bryant-Denny Stadium. But that back half of the schedule, you get Auburn at home this year in October, and I think this is something you made a lot last year. With a guy like Bo Nix, new system, a lot of turnover there, especially on their offense and on their offensive line, as well as that defense, you'd rather get Auburn earlier in the year, I think, than you would later. You also get Tennessee at home, and again, last season, you know better than anyone that – you know, talking up Tennessee, talking up Jared Garantano, it didn't necessarily pan out the way we all thought it would. Now, they ended up having a pretty successful season, but it was a very bumpy ride in getting there. But I think, you know, having Auburn at home, having Florida in Jacksonville, a place Georgia should feel very comfortable now, having Tennessee at home, sort of one of those games. And they're not back-to-back, so you do potentially worry about a trap game. But I think having those games spaced out, I do think that if Georgia can sort of navigate that early part of the schedule with Alabama, it does potentially set up for a run in the second half of the season.
And we'll make this kind of quick because we're a little over on time, but what I also think is kind of interesting is I've seen a little bit of talk about Virginia as of late. Now, I don't think of Virginia as necessarily a threat to Georgia. That's a game I expect Georgia to still be a pretty big favorite in Atlanta to start the season. But our buddy Bud Elliott predicted the other day that Virginia would win the – I guess it's the Coastal.
Would
win the Coastal this upcoming season. We haven't seen a lot of repeat winners in the Coastal. He says that he thinks Virginia can do that. So that's an example of even having lost its quarterback and some of the stuff, you know, from the Orange Bowl team from a year ago – you know, the idea that Virginia may still be a little bit of a living, breathing opponent for UGA in week one, that's at least worth paying a little bit of attention to, I would
right.
say.
Right. I mean, and, you know, I think Virginia very well held its own against Florida in an Orange Bowl that some people thought they were overmatched, myself included. But then you look at South Carolina a year ago in the Belk Bowl at the end of the 2018 season, Virginia just went in there and beat the brakes off of them. So I think Virginia, given that they've played some big time, and certainly SEC East teams, I don't think there's going to be a fear factor there. And I think Bronco Mendenhall is one of the better coaches in college football. He's able to get a lot out of his team, especially when there's not necessarily, perception-wise, a ton of talent. So I think that Virginia game, you know, Georgia's not going to be able to necessarily out-talent their way to a win that day. I think Virginia is good enough to where they're going to have to make Georgia earn it. And I do think that the Bulldogs should be able to do that.
Good stuff, Connor. Thanks so much for your time.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
All right, good stuff there from Connor Riley, as always. You can read him at dognation.com. He's got video stuff going up. Connor, very prolific during the offseason, which we always really like around here. Time now for us to go cruise around the SEC, courtesy of our friends at Royal Caribbean. And, you know, we're talking yesterday about Perfect Day Coco Cay and all the exciting stuff you have to do on one side of the island. Well, on the other side of the island, you got a little bit more my speed. You get the chill side. There's a helium balloon that goes 450 feet in the air. You've got Oasis Lagoon, largest freshwater pool in the Caribbean, different coves you can kind of sort of hide away and rest and relax there. Always a lot of fun. Also coming up really soon, in fact, I think this is actually open now, is the Coco Beach Club, which is floating cabanas right there in the Bahamas. You can kind of just sort of relax. The only place offering that, our friends at Perfect Day Coco Cay. Floating cabanas, helium balloons, everything else to make the experience great. Perfect Day Coco Cay is an exclusive opportunity available only to those on Royal Caribbean vacation. So you need a vacation, there's no better choice than a Royal Caribbean cruise. Contact your travel advisor or reach out to my friends at the Cruise and Vacation Authority. The number to do so, 800-326-4971. That's 800-326-4971. That'll get you in touch with them. But please tell them you heard about them on Dog Nation Daily. And by the way, enjoy your cruise on Royal Caribbean. All right, a couple things here. Tim Brewster, we've talked about him before. Newly hired assistant at Florida. This is a guy that's rattled a bunch of sabers throughout his career. He was a failed head coach at Minnesota. He was a blustery assistant for a long time with a Jimbo Fisher, most recently with Mack Brown in Texas. Now he's at Florida, and he had a very interesting tweet that gets your attention, talking about the Florida Gators and what he calls it, an H-Town takeover. Yeah, there you go. H-Town Gators is what he says on Twitter. I don't have to tell you what I assume this is probably about. There'd already been some online chatter that Zach Evans might take his final official visit to Florida. You do that starting in March. That's when that new calendar resets. Evans has, you know, told Trey Wallace before, that he wanted to do that, and so, or take an official visit, didn't say where. We now believe it's probably Florida. Tim Brewster's tweet there would certainly seem to give you an indication of that. Here is the only piece of advice I can give Florida on this. Now, listen, I'm not going to change my tune on this. I'm a big believer that Zach Evans deserves a chance to play big-time college football and make something of himself in that environment. Good football players should get a chance to play football. And whatever happens after that, happens after that. But I am very, very open to giving guys second, third chances, whatever else. I don't want him to go to Florida. As a fan of Georgia, I don't want Evans at Florida. But I think Evans deserves a chance to play college football. And I'm not going to change my tune on this just because at the moment Georgia doesn't appear to be involved in this. But if you're Florida and you want to make sure Georgia stays out of the mix on this, make sure that Georgia doesn't get involved in Evans again, then maybe kind of keep it a little quiet. The more you got your assistants out there tweeting about H-Town Gators and stuff like that, I mean, Kirby's already shown you that if he wants a recruit and you want a recruit, he's going to swoop in and take that recruit every single time, or just about every single time. So be careful bragging too much about what you may have going on with Evans. The last thing you want is for Kirby Smart to decide he wants to get interested in that situation again. So we'll see where that goes. Even with the Tim Brewster tweet, I don't know that the internet community at large necessarily views Florida as the favorite here. I think that Tennessee is probably still viewed as a slight favorite, maybe even Ole Miss as well, more so than the Gators. But obviously for a Florida program that hasn't had a lot of recruiting wins, maybe a chance to make a little noise here. Speaking of making noise, Auburn wants to do that this upcoming season as well, and they continue to kind of round out their coaching staff. There are reports out there that Chad Moore is going to bring in a guy that he's worked with at SMU, Will Bryant, who kind of got to start as a coach there, worked his way up, kind of, you know, bringing somebody on that offensive staff that's worked closely with Morris before. I guess the reason why I bring this up is, obviously, in addition to, you know, following Georgia and talking to you guys about Georgia every single day, I am a big fan of the SEC. I'm just curious with the movings within the SEC. And one of the things I'm always kind of fascinated by is the way in which that sometimes fans within a program act differently than I assume they're going to act, or behave differently. And we say this all the time about how inside the bubble of Dog Nation, we kind of think one thing, and if you get outside that bubble, you think something a little bit different. It's true with the other schools as well. And the Chad Morris thing here in particular. I kind of assume that Morris would be treated as a big-time hire. This is a former Clemson offensive coordinator. This is a guy that's been a head coach at two different spots. And, yes, he's friends with Gus Malzahn. But this is a guy that I think of as having a little bit of credentials, a little bit of gravitas as an offensive play caller. But in kind of watching the way all this has kind of gone down with Auburn this offseason thus far, you know, I'm not 100% sure that Auburn fans have total buy-in to what they think that Morris is going to do. And some of that may be related to the fact that they're just not quite sure that Gus Malzahn is ready to relinquish, you know, control that offense yet. And, that, you know, you've got a lot of things kind of going on there. So you've probably got a lot of different, you know, things baked into that cake right now. But Morris has not been greeted as a hero in Auburn the way that I kind of thought he probably would. So that's probably worth paying attention to a bit there as well. As Malzahn tries to become a little bit more of a CEO-style coach, we have seemingly been here in this spot a few times, and that tug-of-war ends up getting won by the head coach. Let's see if that changes this time around. By the way, congratulations go out to Sam Pittman, who picked up a big graduate transfer, a defensive lineman from Clemson. Xavier Kelly says that he's going to be finishing out his college career at the University of Arkansas. And isn't it funny? You know, you bring in a guy like Pittman, you know, one of these sort of aggressive guys, upwardly mobile. I mean, when's the last time, and maybe I'm going to, you know, end up being wrong about this, but the idea that a transfer from Clemson would be viewing Arkansas as a landing spot, you know, in the Chad Morris era as head coach, it just, you know, Arkansas was not really much of a factor in the recruiting trail whatsoever. Into the Brett Bielema era, kind of much the same kind of thing. And yet Pittman's here for a little bit, and all of a sudden, you know, they are in more recruiting conversations. We've seen them be in. They're hosting big-time visitors. Transfer coming from Clemson. I'm not telling you that Pittman is going to be a great coach at Arkansas. Obviously, the jury's still out on that. But when you bring in one of these guys that just sort of has that engine revving, you know, 24 hours a day, all of a sudden you get a very, very different, just a very, very different field of the program. There's a lot more going on there now, and I think Pittman's to be credited for that. That's kind of worth noticing. Finally, there's this for his cruise around the SEC, courtesy of our friends at Royal Caribbean. So Paul Feinbaum expressed a kind of an interesting opinion the other day. And do you think there's a chance that maybe next year, because let's face it, Steve Sarkisian would seem to be trying to get his way back into the head coaching conversations again. He's been a rumored candidate at places like, you know, Colorado and other places, that Saban might turn to Hugh Freeze to be his offensive coordinator if, you know, Sarkisian moves on. And obviously, one of the reasons why we would, you know, think this is because it wasn't that long ago that Saban tried to hire Freeze back when he was kind of in still exile after, you know, losing his job at Ole Miss and kind of had his hand slapped by the SEC. They weren't able to do that. Here's the problem, though. I think the notion of Freeze being an offensive coordinator again, I think that ship has sailed. He's at Liberty. I think he's done a pretty good job there. And once you become a head coach again, you're kind of in that head coaching category. I think the more that Freeze kind of stays at Liberty, now it'd probably help if he's not like coaching from a dentist chair or all the different things that he did a year ago. That necessarily wasn't the best look. But I think that Freeze is kind of back in that sort of head coaching pool again. I don't believe that Freeze is going to be anybody's offensive coordinator again anytime soon. In fact, it would not surprise me, just given the way that he's going through a rehabilitation process right now, if Hugh Freeze eventually is not coaching as a head coach again somewhere in the SEC. That seems to be the trajectory where all this is going. I mean, if anything, Freeze is not an ally of Nick Saban. He's been a nemesis of Nick Saban. He's beat him on the field twice. You can say what you want to about Freeze's personal life, and goodness knows everybody has, but in terms of coaching acumen, Freeze has got it. I think he's rehabilitating his reputation at Liberty right now, and I think he'll be back coaching somewhere that we see on TV again very, very soon. We'll make that cruise around the SEC, courtesy of Royal Caribbean. And I'm going to play a little bit of audio in a moment to kind of keep the George Pickens conversation going that we started a little earlier. Before that, though, let me remind you that we're going to be out on the road here pretty soon, a chance for you to come out and see us, and I hope you will do that. We're going to be at the 38th annual Atlanta International Auto Show. It's going to be the Georgia World Congress Center, Building C is where it's going to be. We're going to be there Friday, February 28th. The show itself runs February 26th through March the 1st. Of course, on that date, the 28th, we'll be there when the doors open, so come on by and see us. The auto show is just a really fun thing. You got new cars, new SUVs, two dozen manufacturers represented, all the cool pickup trucks, everything else. Cousin Eddie's RV from Christmas Vacation is going to be there. You got exotic cars from Caffeine and Octane. Adult tickets just $12. Kids 6 through 12 are $6, and 5 and under kids are free. Discounts for heroes and seniors. The website is this, goautoshow.com. That's goautoshow.com, and that'll get you a lot more details on that. All right, a little earlier we talked to Connor Riley about the situation with George Pickens and kind of what his expectations are for Pickens for this upcoming year. And, you know, Mike Griffith has also recently written a piece about Pickens as well. And in that piece, one of the things that Mike did was go back and bring out an interview with Derek Stingley, the terrific cornerback for LSU. Now, obviously, Stingley got the best of everybody when they battled in the SEC championship game back in December, but that doesn't mean that Pickens doesn't have Stingley's respect. So when you want to think about how a guy like George could perform in a new Todd Monken offense, what that matchup might be like, just listen to Derek Stingley's own words here as a way of kind of imagining what that might be like.
Particularly with George Pickens, number one, what did you see from him on film, and what were some important things, facets to that matchup?
He's a very, very good receiver. He's probably up with the best that I've ever guarded. He has quickness off the line. He got speed. His route running is amazing. He got good ball skills. Like he really a well-rounded receiver. Yeah, he's always able to go up and make the play too in the end zone. So
listen, when you got a guy like Stingley validating what George Pickens is doing like that, fun to think about what he might be able to do in a sophomore year. I'll invite you to read Connor Riley's piece at DogNation.com for more on that. And it'd be fun to think about. Stingley's got a couple more years at LSU. Pickens got a couple more years here at Georgia, at least two more years here at Georgia. A little bit of some other head-to-head, high-profile battles between those two players, SEC championship games, something like that. That would not be a bad thing to imagine, and would not be a bad thing to see. Before we go here, let me also, on a more serious note, I'm like so many of you, so many answered prayers about what happened with Ryan Newman yesterday. The fact that the wreck that he suffered at the Daytona 500 is not believed to be life-threatening. NASCAR gave us that great update on that yesterday. Kind of awkward to squeeze that in, but I just wanted to make sure that I acknowledged that what an answer to prayers for so many people that was, and we'll continue to wish him well for a speedy, full recovery. I'll also tell you, Gator Hater Updater, 1,207 days. That's how long since Florida's beaten Georgia. We'll see you tomorrow, Dog Nation Daily, presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia.